Does your antiperspirant keep you dry all day? Dove Men Plus Care Dry Spray goes on instantly dry for a cleaner feel and offers 48 hours sweat and odor protection. Let me repeat that. 48 hours of sweat and odor protection. Use it and don't even think about it. Also, Dove Men Dry Spray contains Dove's unique one-quarter moisturizing cream that helps protect your skin. Try Dove Men Plus Care Dry Spray. Goes on dry, clean feel all day.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
How you doing?
Good, Dan. How about you?
No complaints. No complaints.
That's good. We don't want to hear him anyway, so.
That'll wrap it up for this show.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
That's a fact.
We don't want to hear the complaints.
We don't want to hear.
Absolutely don't want to hear
absolutely
complaints.
Absolutely not.
The Rich Eisen Show with guest host Dan Schwartzman. And now, sitting in for Rich.
Hit the drop.
It's Dan Schwartzman.
Hour two of the Rich Eisen Show. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich on this Friday. I like to think of us as like a really good 24-hour diner. You can always call in, talk about something we talked about earlier in the show. Doesn't matter. 844-204-RICH. 844-204-7424. It's like you go to the diner, you can order breakfast all day long. It doesn't matter if it's midnight, it's 8 at night. You get that omelet. You want to talk some more baseball? By all means, hop on the phone lines. We'll chat some baseball. Shohei Ohtani, Aaron Judge, whatever it is. But the golf world, rattled by LIV and how they are competing against the PGA Tour, and they have the funding to do so. In fact, they are richer than the PGA Tour. $600 billion of Saudi money backing the tour. As of now, I believe 8 of the top 50 players in the world have now signed on to play LIV and have given up playing in the PGA. Alan Shipnuck, author of 8 books, including Phil, that's making a lot of noise right now when you talk about Phil Mickelson joining us here on the show. Alan, first off, I got to tell you, man, that book has made a lot of noise. And not only that, I love following you on social media. Nothing funnier than the whole Greg Norman thing of the goons trying to kick you out of the tournament, him claiming he didn't know anything about it, and the picture you have of him actually standing there. What's come of all this? Do you continue to kind of get slightly harassed by them?
Well, no, I mean, but we'll find out next week in Portland, because I'm going to cover the second event on the LIV golf schedule, so that'll be revealing. I mean, I think I expect the temperature will get turned down a little bit. It doesn't really serve their interest to be harassing journalists. It's a little too on brand for a golf circuit funded by the Saudis. So, I mean, I would expect a warmer welcome, but who knows? I mean, it's such a funny mix of personalities. You know, you said that 8 of the top 50 in the world have joined, but, you know, last year the PGA Tour did this player impact program. It was going to kind of measure the social media reach and more or less the popularity of the players on tour. They had all these different metrics. And so 4 of the top 8 have joined LIV. So some of these guys have not necessarily been performing on the golf course in the last 6 or 12 months, like Bryson DeChambeau, whatever. So his world ranking has slipped, but LIV has really cornered the market on spiky personalities and, needle movers and pot stirrers and some other words we could come up with. So it's a very interesting mix of you know, somewhat larger than life golf personalities. And of course the front man, Greg Norman, fit in that category. So right now it's more interesting as a news event than a sporting event, but we'll see how it develops.
You're right. Patrick Reed, another guy who loves to move that needle as well. May not be beloved, but he certainly is somebody cameras like to obviously go up to. Here's the thing, though. And I was talking to a friend about this recently. You know, you've had other leagues emerge to try to rival other major sports in America, right? USF, XFL, name the different leagues. They just don't seem to have the funding. The difference here is LIV has not just funding. They actually have more money than the actual PGA Tour. In your mind, for what they've done in such a short period of time, should Jay Monahan, the commissioner of the PGA Tour and the tour itself, be incredibly nervous about their future?
Oh, well, they clearly are. And, you know, to build a USFL, you need hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of players, right? I mean,
right.
In golf, you only need a handful, maybe a dozen of stars, and that's better than the field at the Bob Hope or a lot of these other existing tournaments. So it's a much lower barrier of entry. And because players are not you know, they don't have these long-term team contracts in golf. You know, the tour is trying to be possessive, but we'll see if that holds up in court. I mean, it really makes sense if you're going to try and change the sports landscape. Golf is an easy target. So, yeah, the tour is rightfully worried. I mean, it's very much a threat to the financial model of the PGA Tour, and it's long-term sustainability, because not only are they losing Hall of Famers and major championship winners and as we're talking about, guys that the public pays attention to, but they've also courted the next generation of stars. You know, they signed the U.S. amateur champ, and they've made a big run at a lot of top college players. And, you know, if LIV Golf starts to choke off the pipeline of talent, I mean, 2 years ago, no one had ever heard of Scottie Scheffler. Now he's number one in the world rankings. And, you know, 3.5 years ago, no one had heard of Colin Morikawa, and he's one of the best players in the world. You go on down the list. I mean, every sport needs to constantly be producing and minting new stars. And so it's one thing for the Saudis to take, you know, guys who are near the end of their career, who still have a box office but are not competitive, you know, forces week in, week out. But if they also simultaneously are sucking up all the really good young players coming out of college, coming out of Europe, and that is an existential threat to the survival of the PGA Tour. So they're rightfully worried in PGA Tour headquarters.
Alan Shipnick joining us, author of 8 books, including Phil, which is obviously making a lot of noise these days, joining us here on the Rich Eisen Show. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich. Alan, you know, it's come out over the last few days that Jay Monahan had an opportunity to kind of nip this in the bud when he was approached by some players saying, look, let's do this. Let's offer you this. We'll offer some tournaments that we control, and that will probably end any sort of outside interference from something called LIV, which was at that point, I guess, just an idea. And at that time, a few years back, he said, no, I don't think it's a real threat, and turned them down. Is this true, what we're reading? And two, if so, is Jay Monahan's job on the line here, because he obviously misread this whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, he's made a series of miscalculations, and the biggest one that's kind of the through line for all this is overrating the PGA Tour's value to the players. You know, I think that the Tour had a certain arrogance about it. Like, we've always been here. We've been this great platform for the guys. They're not going to leave us. You know, we just can keep leaking out a little more money, and that'll keep them happy. But in fact, the Tour membership doesn't mean as much as the PGA Tour thought it did, as we can see by a lot of players just renouncing their membership. Excuse me. So yeah, there was Monahan was very strident. Like, he's kind of staked out this position that we're the good guys and they're the bad guys. And so, it makes it hard to negotiate when you're villainizing the other side. All of a sudden it's hard to go to the table and try and meet them in the middle, which I think the Tour might have to do eventually. And so, yeah, the decision to not even engage with the Saudi effort, and there was also this parallel tour that was trying to get off the ground, the Premier Golf League.
Right.
And,
right,
you know, for the Tour not to really understand what this could mean and to try and co-opt them. Because Monahan's predecessor was Tim Fincham, who was a lawyer, and he was a political strategist. And, you know, this is what he did to Norman 30 years ago. Norman had this idea for a world tour, and Fincham just stole it and created the World Golf Championships, created the President's Cup. And, you know, Norman's been on this 3-decade campaign for vengeance, essentially. And, you know, Monahan could have done something analogous, but he kind of shrank from the moment. And I think he was a little complacent. And because the PGA Tour has never really had competition, there's a little bit of an atrophy there. And I think it's showing in how flat-footed they've been in their response, how uncreative they've been in trying to, you know, respond to this threat. So I don't think Monahan's job is on the line. You know, he's pumping all this money to his players. And but it's definitely – this was his moment. This was the defining test of him as a commissioner. And I'd give him, you know, probably a D. So the war's not over. I mean, this is going to keep going. There's probably going to be legal challenges. There's going to be a lot of wrangling. There's all this intrigue with the European Tour and the Asian Tour and where they're going to fit into it. So there's still plenty of moves left on the chessboard, but
right.
Monahan's definitely not off to a great start.
No, he's certainly not off to a great start, and I think you're being kind by giving him a D. I think many people would just give him an F at this point because of the fact that he's kind of allowed this to fester. But he did bring up an interesting point a couple of days ago in that press conference where he kind of showed his vulnerability and acknowledging that this is a serious threat. He kind of mentioned, like, what's the motivation for the Saudis here? Alan, do we actually know? Because they're paying $100, $200 million bonuses to players. They're losing their shirt at this point. Can they really make this money back? I mean, financially, this doesn't seem to make sense. What's the motivation?
Well, I mean, it's just classic sports washing, right? There's just reputation laundering. They want to be accepted on the world stage. You know, I just saw there's a big heavyweight boxing match that's going to go on over in Saudi Arabia. I don't think they really care about boxing, but right. More you can bring people over there, the more you can just be part of the conversation globally. And so I went to this first live event in London, and, you know, the most interesting thing was the guy who runs the public investment fund for Saudi Arabia, which has, you know, $600 billion in it, and not an elected official, but certainly one of the most powerful men in the world. And he was just swanning around. He was so happy to be there. The players are dapping him up. He's getting hugs from Norman, and he's getting all these shout outs. And, you know, the tournament was at this place called the Centurion Club, which is really a very private kind of ruling class establishment for the London elite. And it's probably not the kind of place that's going to have a lot of Saudi members, right? It's like
right.
An old boys thing. But for that week, this guy was the toast of the town, and it was his show, and he was being, you know, celebrated everywhere he went. And that's what the Saudis crave, is acceptance. And they want to penetrate the highest levels of society, you know, in the Western world, even while doing things their own way. And so the notion, you know, I've said, it's been written lately, like, well, the Saudis just may lose interest and this could all go away in a year or two. If you saw His Excellency swanning around at the Centurion Club, you know that they are very happy with the money they've spent. And this investment means so much to them, because it's all they crave is legitimacy and acceptance. And they're buying it through sports. I mean, that's really what this is all about. And it's very transactional. And, you know, to pump, you know, whatever they're going to wind up spending on this thing, $1 billion, I mean, I think probably Americans have spent that in the last couple of days on gas. Like, they're not going to run out of money anytime soon. So I think it's clear that they're getting what they want. And so therefore there's no reason to think that they're going to turn the spigot off anytime soon.
Well, I'll be pumping about $80 more to their way tomorrow when I have to fill up my tank. So, you know, I'll pay for a little bit of the next golfer's bonus. Last question, Alan. Can these two, in your mind, and you've been around the sport a long time, 25 years with Sports Illustrated covering the sport, can two competing, big money, successful tours live side by side, or is this going to end up being one's got to emerge over the other?
I mean, the basic problem is there's only, you know, 10 golfers in the world anybody cares about, right? I mean,
right.
If that, exactly. There's just not enough star power to go around. If you split it up between two tours, they both suffer. You know, I live in Northern California. My hometown event is the Crosby Clam Bake, and they get three big names every year: Phil, Dustin Johnson, and Jordan Spieth, and that's it. And now the tournament's lost two of them. That has a major impact on the enthusiasm locally. AT&T, which sponsors the event, they cannot be happy. I mean, so, as you look at it in that context, it's really hard for two leagues to prosper. And it's hard to imagine, given the level of the rhetoric and all the lines that have been drawn in the sand here. But I honestly believe the best move for everyone is for the PGA Tour to just absorb these Saudi events and, you know, they're going to do these big money events in the fall. Like, that would have been a perfect place to slot them in. And it would have been a win for everyone in that the players would get even bigger money. The tour would kind of end this existential threat. And the Saudis would get what they crave, which is legitimacy. You know, they're welcomed into the golf world. So I still think something like that is possible. Everyone's going to have to, like, kind of, hold their nose a little bit, because neither side has much respect for each other, but the live events, they're interesting as news events, but not as competition. Nobody really cares about the golf. So you have to wonder, how long is that sustainable? If no one's heart is really in the competition, from the fans and the players and certainly the press. And, I think they could leverage what they have to get what they really want, which is acceptance. And for the tour, it would secure its long-term future. And they get all the players back in the fold. They get all this influx of money. Unfortunately, excuse me, I'm sorry. It's the source of the money causes a lot of angst. But anyways, there is a solution. Yeah. They're going to have to be creative, but otherwise, both organizations they're both going to suffer. Yeah, there's just not enough players to go around to make all these tournaments interesting if there's two different tours.
Well, you've highlighted Phil Mickelson, obviously one of the biggest names who has crossed over, the biggest name to cross over with the book Phil. I'm sure you can get it anywhere, Alan. I'm sure it's flying off the shelves. Great publicity with that book. And I'm sure Amazon, any of the big booksellers, any of the local stores have it, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I always try and tell people to go to their local independent bookstore because,
agreed,
you know, those places were hit so hard by COVID and are struggling to survive. But for sure, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere you like your books. Actually, I read the Audible version, which was a fun challenge. And if I've gotten more into audiobooks. And I think when the author reads it, there's a different level of passion and investment. So if people are interested in that, you know.
I wrote that. My goodness, he's reading me.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. Anyway, I agree with you. Go to the local bookstore here in New York. Go to Strand, of course, places like that. Support the locals for sure. Alan Shipnick, author of 8 books, including Phil, longtime golf writer with SI. Alan, appreciate the time, my friend, and have a great weekend.
Okay, thanks for having
me. Awesome stuff there. Alan Shipnick. Yeah, Phil has made, woo, Art Martinez. That book has really caused a lot of waves there. And expose the true Phil Mickelson that a lot of people never wanted to see over the years.
Interesting. Very, very interesting talk right there.
It is. Now, we're going to get more into it next. But first, every golf equipment company claims to be longer off the tee. But Callaway's new Rogue ST driver is the only one built to completely bomb it. It's been speed-tuned to be Callaway's fastest, most stable driver ever. Every Rogue ST is engineered with a new tungsten speed cartridge, which gives you more speed on off-center hits and provides more forgiveness thanks to high MOI. But that's just the beginning, because Callaway has engineered a Rogue ST for every player. Most golfers will fit into the max because of its incredible combination of distance and forgiveness, but there's also Max D, their dedicated draw model for players who need more shot shape correction. Now, if you need something more low spin, there's Max LS, which gives you stronger trajectory with a more neutral ball flight. But for the true players out there, the Rogue ST Triple Diamond LS is the compact low spin head that the tour players love. Callaway has thought through every aspect of speed, so all you have to do is go Rogue. Find your Rogue ST driver at callawaygolf.com/go-rogue. I'm going to tell you why this is going to backfire on the PGA Tour, with them announcing more money, more events, more live type of issues with no cuts, smaller fields, and marquee prize money. Why it's actually going to hurt them that they're doing that. That's coming up next. Your thoughts as well, 844-204-RICH, 844-204-7424. I'm Dan Schwartzman in for Rich Eisen on a Friday edition of The Rich Eisen Show.
It's one thing for the Saudis to take, you know, guys who are near the end of their career, who are still a box office but are not competitive, you know, forces week in, week out. But if they also simultaneously are sucking up all the really good young players coming out of college, coming out of Europe, and that is an existential threat to the survival of the PGA Tour. So they're rightfully worried in PGA Tour headquarters.
Alan Shipnick, author of 8 books, including the one that's making a lot of noise now, Phil, just joined us here on The Rich Eisen Show. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich on a beautiful Friday. I'll be here again in a couple weeks, July 4th week. I'll be here Thursday and Friday. Looking forward to those 2 days. You know, the PGA Tour keeps shooting itself in the foot. And here's the problem that I have with it. They just came out a couple of days ago and announced that they are going to increase prize money on 8 existing events. They're going to be adding a few events, I believe maybe upwards of 4, where they're going to use the live format, which is smaller fields, no cuts, and larger prize money. You know, That's great, but if I'm a PGA Tour player, I'm actually upset, and here's why. It took them having competition for them to open the purse more and pay out more, right? Meaning they have the money. They were just withholding the money prior. Now it's like, oh yeah, we have to compete because there is a real threat here. So we're going to actually offer you more money. My answer is awesome, but where was this money before? The whole point is you always want to keep your guys happy, right? The product isn't the PGA Tour. The product is the golfers, right? They're independent contractors is what they are. They're not teams. It's not like an interchangeable team where you can change out the point guard or the first baseman or the quarterback or the goalie. No, this is golf, independent guys. And they're flying out, renting a place to stay for a week, whatever it might be, and they're playing. And they're putting their own money on the line to try to win more money. And for the PGA Tour to now come out and say, yeah, we're going to increase prize money and add events, I would have said, well, why did it take the LIV series for you to do that? We're the product. We're the reason why fans come out to watch, not you. You're just the organization. So why did this money suddenly appear and not be there before? If you had maybe been paying us more and had larger prize amounts, maybe there never would have been a secondary type of league striving to take over. So while it sounds great to me, if I'm a golfer, I'm a little upset by this. It's like they've been holding out. You see the point here, Art? Like, it sounds great that, yeah, we're going to give you more money, which means they've been sitting on this pile of money before and not giving it to us beforehand.
They didn't think that anybody was going to rival them.
Yes. But now you find out as a member of the PGA Tour that they've had this money and they could have increased the prize money prior. But they didn't. It took competition for them to do that.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, they're paying handsomely. And yeah, I mean, pro golfers, if you're a good one, you're making obviously a great living and you're making money on the course and you're making a ton of money off the course. But as an independent contractor, I want to make as much money as possible. And by the way, I love when people say, yeah, but did Dustin Johnson need another $200 million? He's already making a lot of money. That's like the dumbest thing anybody can say. Because no one, regardless of how rich you are, is turning down $200 million. If I'm making $15 million a year, and I'm not, but if I was...
You're close, though.
I'm close. I'm about 14.9.
Yeah, yeah.
But Art, if somebody's waving $200 million, that's still life-changing money. Yeah, you're living quite the large life anyway.
But you're playing... Not gonna, and it's not like you're building bridges or digging a ditch. You're playing a game.
Yeah, and if somebody wants to throw $200 million and larger prize money and more opportunities to win money because there's no cuts... Who's turning that down?
No
one.
And
I hate the argument, but he's rich enough. He doesn't need the money. That's not who are you to say that Dustin Johnson doesn't need the money? He has a big lifestyle anyway. Paulina Gretzky has an expensive lifestyle. She's a Gretzky.
Of course.
Okay?
Of course.
So he's making 15, 20, whatever. Who cares what he's making?
The bottom
line is. If
somebody's
saying, here's $10 more million, then fine. You could say, really, dude, you're going to leave for $10 million? He's leaving for $200 million. You don't sneeze at that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And this is America. You can make as much as you want.
Yeah, and who am I to tell Dustin Johnson, no, turn it down because you have to stay at the PGA Tour? No, I'd leave for $200 million. Where do I sign? He won his majors. Who cares? They're playing majors not because of legacy. They're playing majors and trying to win because of the money. Why do guys want to make the cut so they play two more days and they make money? Because they're independent contractors. So if somebody throws you $200 million or in Bryson DeChambeau's case, $100 million, you don't say thanks, but no thanks. You say, where do I sign? And the arrogance of golf fans to tell these guys, you don't need the money. Come on, dude. Anybody can use that kind of money regardless of what you already have in your bank account. So your grandkids are set up. Now you set up their grandkids. Oh, you got enough money. Does Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos need more money? Yeah, why not? When did you get capped, right? When did you get capped as how much money you can have or are supposed to have?
We're not a communist society, absolutely.
No. I love that argument. Oh, Dustin Johnson's greedy. He already has enough money. Says who? And what's enough money? When you start making that kind of money, you live a high lifestyle, which means you need more money to support it. It's that simple. I mean, come on. Look, I love some. Okay, say you make 50 grand. Good for you. You make 50 grand. And you have that $50,000 lifestyle. And next thing you know, you get another job and they're paying you 200 grand. I dare you to find me the guy who doesn't then increase his lifestyle as it pertains to somebody making 200 grand compared to 50 grand. Very few people would keep living the 50 grand lifestyle if they're making 200 grand, right? Everybody looks to upgrade. You'll get a nicer car. You'll get a bigger place. It's human nature, correct? And then if you go from 200 grand to $1 million, you probably don't keep living the lifestyle of the 200 grand. You live the lifestyle of the $1 million. So for Dustin Johnson making a good amount of money, he lives a lifestyle that costs a good amount of money. That house in Florida isn't a 3-bed, 2-bath house with half an acre. You know what I'm saying? It's a gated community on a golf course, and it's probably 8-bed, 9-bathrooms. And then he's got the house elsewhere. And good for him. You want the place in Aspen? Go buy the place in Aspen if you can afford it. And if you have a way to maintain your lifestyle because somebody's going to throw $200 million your way to leave the PGA Tour, by all means, take it. You're an idiot not to take it. It's honestly that simple. Don't put yourself in somebody else's financial shoes. I think we do that way too often when it comes to professional athletes or business people. We seem to want to dictate how they should live their life and on what budget. Who am I to tell anybody how they should live their life financially? I'm not inserting myself in their lifestyle, though I always did say at a young age, I would love to insert myself into Derek Jeter's lifestyle. You know how much fun that must be? Like, imagine being the king of, like, New York.
New York. The king being of being loved by New York.
Okay, or take
but
LA.
Being right? who's hated by, like, Los Angeles and everywhere else.
But I mean, all right, who's like the king of L.A.? Clayton Kershaw?
Maybe, yeah.
Mookie Betts?
Freddie Freeman?
Nah, but that's new. How about like the guy who's had like the legacy there of like being beloved?
Well,
what'd you say?
What's his name? Just won a Super Bowl.
Matt Stafford?
That's
only a year. It's, you know. Aaron Donald. Let's say Aaron Donald.
Aaron Donald, okay? Just got that huge contract.
Yeah. So let's say Aaron Donald. Like, imagine, like, if Aaron Donald, I don't know if he's single, I don't know his marital status, but say he's a single dude, right? With a ton of money, and he's still a young guy, he's, what, 29, 30 years old. Like, imagine hanging out with Aaron Donald in L.A. for a night, where money's not an issue, right? You want to go to the club, you go to the club. By the way, you get into any club you want without having to wait in line. You want the bottle service, the $5,000 bottle of Cristal, guess what?
And they comp you.
They comp you anyway, and B, if they don't, what's a $5,000 bottle of Cristal for Aaron Donald who's making $40 million, right? You can afford it. So I used to think as a youngster, like, man, imagine like hanging out with Derek Jeter. He's making like $19 million at the time. And of course, he's making millions in endorsements. But like a single guy owning New York City, as you said, he's probably comped everything. Doesn't have to wait in a line. He goes to a club. He shows up. They let him in. VIP section. The young ladies are swooning over him, right? Good-looking dude. Like, imagine that. Like, imagine that lifestyle. Man, I couldn't imagine it. Why? Because I've never lived it.
Weren't there stories about him and Jeter and A-Rod going out together?
Yeah, they used to. So they used to be, like, best friends until A-Rod had that article, that jealousy article, I forgot in what publication, where he said, like, if Jeter wasn't in, you know, he's overrated. If he wasn't in New York, they wouldn't look at him the same way kind of thing.
Yeah, that's right.
And after that, that angered Jeter to where their friendship was never the same. And rightfully so. I mean, if he's your friend, he shouldn't be talking bad about you, especially publicly. But they used to be buddies because when Jeter was drafted by the Yankees, I believe it was a year before A-Rod went number one overall. And leading up to that draft, from what I understood and read, was that A-Rod kind of reached out through his agent to Jeter, and they started a dialogue, became really good friends. And when the Mariners would play in New York, he would actually stay at Jeter's place. And when the Yankees would play in Seattle, Jeter would stay at A-Rod's place, and they'd hang out and party and go out. You know, two good-looking young guys, a lot of money, hitting the town, you know, a lot of fun. And then obviously after A-Rod pulled that in the article, sheer jealousy again, that completely changed. And Jeter's the type of guy, from what I understand, that if you cross him, you cannot get back. Like, you do something to lose his trust, you cannot regain the trust. And that happened to A-Rod. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich Eisen. It is a Friday here on the Rich Eisen Show. Got any thoughts? Give it to us, 844-204-RICH. That's 844-204-7424. And that's what it comes down to. Again, you know, it all stemmed from me talking about people trying to tell Dustin Johnson, now you shouldn't take the money. This guy, don't take the money. But it's fascinating. And I'm not a big golf guy. Let me throw that out there. When it comes to golf, I am a Tiger Woods fan, okay? I am not a golf fan. So when Tiger's not playing in a U.S. Open or a PGA Championship or whatever it may be, honestly, I don't really watch. I don't really have a thought on Scottie Scheffler. I've always thought Phil Mickelson is a guy that's beloved for really the wrong reasons. I never understood why people loved Phil so much. I always thought there was kind of a phoniness there, and you're seeing it now, you know? Tiger's the reason why I would actually watch golf. I was always fascinated by his abilities, the way that he would transcend the sport, the way that he was a legit generational talent. It's a term we throw around way too much these days in other sports, right? Oh, this guy's a generational talent. No, he's not. All right, most guys are not generational talents that we say are generational talents. Tiger Woods is legitimately a generational talent. So he's always what kind of drew me to golf. But as a sports fan who has watched, you know, I was young when the USFL came around. I was too young to follow sports. But watching the XFL and all these other little leagues pop up, right? That tried to somewhat compete with the big boys and, of course, never had the financing to do it, so they couldn't do it. And ultimately, either just kind of stayed as a minor league novelty type of thing or ended up folding after a couple of years because they weren't making any money. No one was showing up to the games. There were no fannies in the stands. The TV deals were nowhere worth continuing to play for. And they would fold. But what's fascinating watching this PGA Tour versus LIV, L-I-V, is the fact that you actually have a rival league that financially can compete with that major league, which is the PGA Tour. And as Jay Monahan, the commissioner of the PGA Tour, said a couple of days ago, in fact, the PGA Tour can't financially compete with LIV. Because when you have a monarchy spending or has the ability to access $600 billion.
It's OPEC money.
OPEC money. Literally, it's you know, gold. It's black gold money. If they have the ability to access $600 billion, as much money as the PGA Tour may have, guess what? They're not even remotely close financially in terms of what they're able to access as LIV is. So I'm sitting back and it's watching a prize fight, right? This is like a heavyweight brawl. This is like those boxing matches that unfortunately are too rare to see the top two dogs of a division actually fight each other, right? Like Fury, Wilder, guys like that. Rarely do you have the best of the best in each weight class fighting each other because there's too much politics involved. Here you have a case where you literally have a champion in the PGA Tour that's a heavyweight.
Tyson.
It's Tyson, you're right. And then you have this upstart, and this isn't a Buster Douglas one-and-done type upstart where you're like, all right, he got lucky, and it's never going to happen again. And that was the case with Buster Douglas, right? He beats Tyson. What happens? He gets a little rich and a little fat, and he can't win after that.
He gets knocked out.
And he literally did get fat. But I'm saying is, like, you know, the bottom line is you're looking at a heavyweight fighter that has emerged very quickly that is now going to step into the ring with Mike Tyson and is equipped to do so, I think's the best way to put it, Art.
Holyfield.
Right. But here's the thing. Like, their rise is quicker than Holyfield's rise to stardom. Their rise to stardom is meteoric. I mean, where were they a year ago? They were a concept, right? Now they're a reality. And maybe it's just a vanity project at this point, considering they're just not, you know, again, and Alan Shipnick put it the best way. He's like, look, it's not the golf people are watching at this point, right? It's everything else. The actual golf isn't anything spectacular. It's not. Do people care who wins the LIV series? No. It's like watching wrestling and knowing it's fake, but you love the dialogue and you love the drama and the storylines. You're not watching live for the actual match going on in the ring, who gets suplexed, this and that. No one cares. You're watching for that guy on the mic who's yelling at Vince McMahon or Triple H or the Big Show, whatever it might be. That's what you're watching. Or maybe it's you're watching a train wreck, you're thinking it's about to go off the rails here, but it's going to be fun watching. But how often have we had a competitor that actually has the financial ability and backing to take out the big dog? And maybe Liv can do that to PGA. All right, the NHL Stanley Cup Final could be coming to an end later tonight in Denver. Colorado Avalanche up 3-1 on the two-time defending Stanley Cup champion Tampa Bay Lightning. Who's favorite? Who should be? And do we care? Dan Schwartzman in for Rich Eisen. It's a Friday edition right here at the Rich Eisen Show. 45 past the hour. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich Eisen, the Rich Eisen Show. And NHL Stanley Cup Final game number 5 is tonight. I always confuse. It's the Stanley Cup Final and the NBA Finals. I always confuse the two. By the way, you know what I love about hockey? They just had the awards ceremony, right? And a lot. First of all, hockey hair is alive and well. Nothing like hockey hair. It's the modern-day mullet, I guess. Because back in the day, hockey hair was an actual mullet. Now it's like kind of a cooler version. It's like the rock and roll long hair, right? Or like the wrestler Sting long hair when he was cool. Remember, Sting first had like spiked hair. Then became like the guy that was kind of like wearing all black and leather. And he had like the long hair. That's like the new hockey hair. But I love the names of the awards. It's not just the MVP award, right? It's the Hart Trophy. The Vezina Trophy.
The Norris.
Calder Trophy. Norris. Exactly. It's so like Jack Adams, right? It's very British sounding, right? Oh, you take home the Jack Adams Award in the Vezina. You know? It's awesome. I love it. Hey, the President's Cup. It's not, I just had the best record in the league. Whoop-de-doo. It's, no, you get the President's Cup. I love it. I like hockey. You know, I'm a hockey guy. I really am. Maybe it's because I'm an East Coast guy. I don't know. But I do like hockey.
Well, who's your favorite team?
I'm a Ranger fan.
Oh, okay.
So I'm happy with the direction of my team because the rebuild has gone much quicker than anticipated.
They went further than everybody thought.
When you have the best goalie, it's going to happen. And he's still only 25, 26 years old, just won a Vezina. And he's going to be there for 10 years. So, you know, you think they could win in 10 years with Igor Shesterkin. But, you know, tonight's going to be interesting because it's game 5. It's in Colorado. You never want to count out the Tampa Bay Lightning. They are down 3-1. But you don't want to count them out. They did lose the first 2 games of the series in Denver, although game 2 was much closer. 4-3, I think. 4-3 game 1. Then it was 7-0 game 2. But they're two-time defending champions. And you start to wonder, you know, the Rangers gave Tampa Bay a run for their money. And it was a 6-game series, but every game was brutal. Every game really kind of came down to the wire. There was overtimes. I mean, it was an intense series. And the Rangers, I think, kind of ran out of steam because they had played 7-game series prior, right? With Pittsburgh and Carolina, whatever
it is.
Yeah,
you just can't do that. You can't take your series to 7 each round.
I think they played 20 games in 40 days or something.
It's way too much on your body.
And I think Tampa Bay, in a 6-game series with the Rangers, remember they had first swept out the Florida Panthers the series before, and they started off flat against the Rangers. But then I think the Rangers kind of worked them for 6 games. Meanwhile, Edmonton, you know, Colorado swept out Edmonton in 4 games. So they were the more well-rested team heading into the Stanley Cup final. And I think it's showing, you know, you're laboring at this point. You've played over 100 games, right? Or right around 100 games. You got to be laboring. And any other time, if you told me, am I going to take Darcy Kemper in goal or am I going to take Andrei Vasilevsky, you would clearly say Vasilevsky's a better goalie. But Vasilevsky looks winded. I mean, he does not look like the superstar goalie is. If you go around the league and say, who's the best goalie in hockey, they're not going to say Shesterkin because he's only done it really for this year. And he showed flashes the year before. You're going to say Andrei Vasilevsky is the best goalie in hockey. Well, he's won 2 straight Stanley Cups, so he's a good answer. But he's not playing great hockey right now. In fact, he's not really outplaying Darcy Kemper. And Darcy Kuemper's not in the same class as Andre Vasilevsky. But it doesn't matter, because I think when you're playing a brutal sport like hockey, and people kind of forget, the average shift time when a guy's on the ice is under 2 minutes, minute and a half, minute 45 seconds.
45 seconds to a minute.
So, yeah, sometimes even less. So the reality is these guys go out there and they exert unbelievable amounts of energy going up and down the ice, stopping on a dime, getting right back to full speed, stopping on a dime,
well,
getting
Colorado,
back to full speed.
Colorado is so good that they've got so much team speed, they roll four lines at you.
They do. They do. Kadri goes out, comes in, scores a winning goal, you know?
That's why they're so rested. They roll four lines. They're so good. They're so deep.
Yeah. But again, Tampa's really good, too. I mean, look at the star power on Tampa. You know, Victor Hedman is a Hall of Fame caliber player. You know, Steven Stamkos will be a Hall of Fame 500 goal, 600 goal scorer when it's all said and done. Kucherov is a stud. Braden Point's been banged up. He's a really good player. Right? Andre Palat, Palat's a good player. There's a lot of talent. There's so much talent between these two teams right now. It's unbelievable, right?
Oh, they, yeah, they're the two best teams. They're the two best, clearly the two best teams in the NHL.
You could actually watch this and say to yourself, you are watching the two best teams in the league. No one snuck in that wasn't deserving. Look, if the Rangers had won, you could say, hey, a lot of talent on that team. Hats off to them, right? But in terms of who actually are the two best teams in hockey, you're watching them right now. Star power for both teams, just absolute studs, and great players. And that's why they're both there. Look, Tampa Bay may lose this series. But I'm going to tell you right now, Art Martinez, even down 3-1, do I think Tampa could win 3 in a row? Absolutely they could win 3 in a row. Now, they'd have to win 2 games on the road at Colorado, but if anybody's going to win 2 games on the road, it's Tampa. I'm not counting them out.
Oh, no, not at all. They won the last 2 cups.
Yeah, now if I'm a betting man, yeah, I probably would pick against them. That's just because they're down. They have to win 2 of 3. Well, they have to win 3 of 3. Hold on, 5. My math's terrible. They have to win 3 in a row, okay? Yeah, they have to win 3 in a row. Yes, there you go. There's my math. They can do it. Absolutely, Tampa Bay can win 3 in a row. But I don't think they will. I do think Colorado wins their first cup since 2000-2001. And hats off to them. I mean, what an unbelievable team they are. And I do want to throw this out there. All this talk about too many men on the ice, you know, John Cooper brought it up, the head coach of the Lightning, and, you know, I think it's a little sore loser there. Anytime when you have line changes on the fly, and I do watch because I'm always fascinated how quickly guys go on, guys go off, right? And how they do it. The reality is, you know, Colorado, yes, they had 6 men on the ice. I believe Tampa had 7 at that time because guys were going off as well. So it's just a case where if you follow enough hockey and you watch enough games, a lot of times during a line change, there is that moment where you have an extra guy on the ice who's trying to get off the ice. It happens. And if they didn't score in that moment, guess what? No one would have said boo. No one would have cared. It never would have come up. No one would have even noticed it. The only reason people are noticing it now is because, obviously, you know, what happened? Kadri scores the goal. They win in overtime and take a 3-1 lead. I would have absolutely have preferred Tampa to win because I think this is deserving of a 7-game series. These two teams, as we said, the two best teams in hockey going toe-to-toe, guess what? It's deserving of being a 7-game series. It could still be a 7-game series. I mean, Rangers were down, what, 3-1 to the Pittsburgh Penguins in that opening round, and they came back 1-3. It can certainly happen here. But, man, what I do love about hockey in the postseason, okay, and I watch a lot of postseason in every sport, what I think hockey does well, much better than the NBA, they let them play. NBA, there's too many ticky-tack fouls being called. I'm always looking at that, and I'm saying, come on, really? Like, do you really need to call that? Just because you anticipate there's going to be contact when a guy drives the lane, you're going to blow the whistle? Come on, let them play. It kind of ruins the flow. But on the other side of it, in the NHL, when you hit the postseason, officials kind of understand to keep that whistle in their pocket a little bit longer, and unless it's egregious, don't blow that whistle. Because people want to see the good hockey. People want to see that competitiveness. And they certainly are seeing it because you're not blowing the whistle. And I love that. All right, there's actually news breaking right now. In terms of Aaron Judge and the Yankees, they were in a four-hour arbitration hearing. That has changed. I'll tell you what it is next as we begin hour three. Dan Schwartzman filling in for Rich Eisen on a Friday right here. It's the Rich Eisen Show.
For the real story behind some of wrestling's biggest moments, it's Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard and Conrad Thompson, too.
All-time Hogan opponents, Macho Man's got to be in the conversation. Where's Andre for you?
I've always said Andre was number one.
Wow.
Because even going back before, you know, Hulk Hogan was a babyface, Hulk and Andre were able to go in and headline at the New Orleans Superdome, at Shea Stadium in Japan. Wherever they went, that was an attraction.
Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.